Good afternoon. Thanks very much to my fellow panelists for those great presentations. And I'm going to shift gears a little bit now and redirect towards a look at the next generation of public health workers, healthcare providers, health educators, people on the front lines and in health policy and in many areas of public health, and look at how the way that we educate them and train them and sensitize them to community and patient-level issues will eventually translate into their engagement with partnerships down the road, and how we do that through our own training and partnerships now. One of the first things I'll mention is that universities have right now, particularly in the global health area, an increasing trend of advertising these opportunities for hands-on learning for students in the field. So think of a photograph of an American medical student in a white coat in a sub-Saharan African country holding a baby and smiling. That's something that's become a bit of a marketing thing for global health programs. And I'm a believer in the value of hands-on learning. I think that's a critical part of the way that healthcare providers, public health practitioners, health educators, and the like will learn and be prepared for the future. However, I think we have to think very carefully about what motivates our partnerships, how we engage in them, and how we're teaching our students about partnerships. So that's the context of my remarks today, and I'm going to use the philosophy that we've used at Princeton in global health education as an example of how you can address some of the vulnerabilities of hands-on learning programs. First, I'll just note that I have no relationships to disclose. So a quick background on how we approach global health research and teaching at Princeton, just to give some context. We have an integrated research and teaching program, and it's defined by three key elements. The first one that is different from many institutions that teach and research on global health is that we don't have one department that owns global health. So we're a bit of an unusual institution in that we are super excited not to have a medical school or a public health school, so there is no department that is the default dominant player in the field. We have social and natural scientists, engineers, and people in the humanities all working on global health questions, and we have a pretty good track record for them working together across the disciplines. Another key element is that hands-on learning is central to how we approach global health teaching and train our students also in beginning the practice of research. And a third is that our global health programs are housed in a school of public policy. Again, that is a bit different than some institutions. And that's where we think we get some of our strength in interdisciplinary engagement and also in our emphasis on the policy dimensions of health. So today I'm going to discuss what are the three defining aspects of the way we approach global health teaching that mark a really different philosophy compared to some other places. And I think that they're best measured as priorities in terms of how we invest in them. So I'll be talking about that next. But first, a quick summary. I'm going to focus today on our undergraduate education because that's where a lot of our research and resources go. And that's also the area where I work the most, so I'll talk about what I know quite well. In terms of how we're structured, we have a two-year program for undergraduates concentrated in the junior and senior years. At Princeton, it's called a certificate in global health and health policy. In most places, it would be called a minor. So you think of it as a program that you do in addition to whatever your major is. And we have participation from over 20 departments across the university. So its composition is highly interdisciplinary. And you'll see in the structure, we have classroom learning as part of the program. We have required and elective courses. But a big part of what draws students and what attracts their interest is this opportunity to do a summer internship or a research project. And that's been a big part of my job in the program, is building and running a hands-on learning program. So So I'll be discussing what makes our model and our approach unique. Quick preview. First, our global health program includes a focus on what is local and what is a domestic health issue. So we suffer from a naming problem here. Often when you hear global health, you think about what's far away. That's very true for students as well. And a core value for us is to emphasize that what's happening in your local environment and in your national environment, especially with what's happening in U.S. health policy right now, is as important as somewhere very, very far away. So that's integral to our philosophy. Another defining element is that we invest a considerable amount of resources in mentorship, and that's in terms of financial resources, but also in time and in staffing. So we take mentorship of our students very, very seriously, and that translates into how we engage with partners. We really strive to embody what's the truest meaning of partnership. This one, personally, is very important to me because I come from an NGO background, and even after spending several years at an academic institution on the administration side, I still think first and foremost of what are the needs and priorities and working realities of the partners who work with us. And in partnership, it often means they take our students as summer interns. They host our students as researchers. So it's particularly important to me that we're inculcating our students with a sense of respect for our partners and that we are practicing that same sense of respect for our partners. And finally, another unique area of our work is that we have this continuous feedback loop between research and teaching. So our faculty who are teaching our global health courses, whether they're domestic or internationally focused, are linking that in with their research, and they're really trying to engage students from the classroom into the research as well. So I'll give a few examples. First, our philosophy of interweaving local and global perspectives. There are very, very strong connections between very local public health challenges and very international public health challenges, and we want our students to understand that. I think that a lot of institutions dealing in global health have students who are attracted to the glamour of the far off, the exotic, developing countries that are really strained in terms of health resources, whether it's a health workforce issue or supply chain issues or infrastructural problems or social, political, or economic problems. Those are major problems. But we want students to understand first and foremost that there are pressing issues right in their own backyards, and it's imperative to understand those and to see the connections. So I have a couple of examples of students here that we've had studying global health. One is a student who was working with community health workers in Sierra Leone on HIV/AIDS education and outreach. And we have another student who is working with New York City Public Health Schools on how they are using the classroom to address childhood obesity. How are they working in innovative ways to integrate nutrition and physical activity into their school programming, and particularly looking at school lunch. So to us, those are equally relevant global health issues. They know no boundaries, and in fact, there are stronger connections than one might realize, and so we want the students to understand that. Now, one of the challenges we face with this global-local connections thing is a naming problem. So how do you message to students and to the world beyond that your global health program is not just about developing countries and low-resource settings in other countries? That's something that we are continuously working on, and I would welcome suggestions afterward from others who do related work on how we can convey this more directly. A great benefit, though, that we see of this approach is that we're really maximizing the opportunities for students to learn and understand the connectivity across geographical bounds. Okay, a second area that I had mentioned previously that I want to talk about more now is mentorship. So because hands-on learning is a key aspect of our program, and it's something that students really seek, they want to go out into the field and get their hands dirty, so to speak. We've thought very carefully about how we can do that well in two ways. One is, as an educational institution, how are we serving the students when we give them a field-based experience? But second, as I mentioned from the NGO perspective, are we really helping partners when we're sending students to a setting? Students, because we're dealing with undergraduates who have limited experience, they're at the very beginnings of their careers. They have a newer and fresh perspective, but they also may need more support and hand-holding. Are we serving our partners well when we say, hey, we have an undergraduate intern for you to come and help in some way? Not necessarily. So a key criterion for working with partners when I start looking at who are field partners, whether they're local or international, who might want to take on a student is, can this student fill a need and add value even after you account for all the time it's going to take to have a student intern? Someone has to manage that person. Someone has to have a project for that person. Someone has to help that person, that student, with where are they going to live when they're interning with you? How are they going to handle adaptation to a new setting, whether it's near or far? Are we really adding value when we send a student to a field partner? And so once we've passed that litmus test that, yes, the student really can contribute something meaningful that's worthwhile to the partner, the next question is, are there other ways we can provide support? And that's where our mentorship comes in. So an innovative model we've used is that we use advanced graduate students and postdocs very often, and sometimes also faculty members, to mentor the students and sometimes even be in the field setting with the student supervising. So usually we have someone who has cultural background and training and expertise who may already have a research network. So the folks that I feature in these pictures are a couple of our postdocs who had experience and training able to give technical backup and support to our students, but also to have community linkages and buy-in so that there's really good intercultural engagement. There is assurance of respect and understanding, and for students who are dealing with a cultural adaptation, that there's someone in the middle who can really mediate that experience. It also takes some of the pressure off of our partners, who are often resource-strapped institutions that don't have the marginal staff person to just manage an intern. So that's something we're really proud of in the way that we work, and I'll talk later about what are some of the challenges of that model. Okay, another key area is reciprocity. So a lot of institutions talk about partnership, and as I mentioned, what partnership sometimes means is there's a field site where you can conduct your academic research as a U.S.-based institution. There is a field site where you can send your students and they can get quick exposure to a very different setting. But what does that do for the partner in the short and the long term? Are we really adding value as an institution? And how can we be better partners in the truest sense? How can we really walk the walk and talk the talk together in the partnership model? I think that there's been a tendency for a more extractive approach to partnership, and what we really want to work on is strengthening exchange. So a couple of examples is that we've started to partner with institutions in a way that we are not just a sending institution. We are not just launching our students or our researchers off to a setting where they can do their research and get data, but we're also a receiving institution. So we've instituted these pilots of bringing over graduate students and faculty members to spend a semester or a year at our institution, and they engage sometimes in teaching, sometimes they engage in taking courses, they participate in seminars and workshops. We've had great connections for the visitors and for our own students and faculty in this engagement, but it's really about we're not just doing one-way partnership. There's a lot of one-way partnership out there, and we want to do something more than that. So a final area I'll mention is the integrated research and teaching. What we try and do when we support faculty research through our Global Health Program is that if you're going to get an internal grant for new and innovative faculty research, basically comes with a tax, which is that you have to commit to integrating that research as a faculty member into the teaching you do. You have to do your best to either create new courses that focus around what you're doing, or you weave the research in novel ways into your courses. And then you also take on students as part of the research. and you engage them in meaningful ways so that we're connecting much better what's happening in faculty research to what's happening in the classroom to what's happening in students' hands-on learning experience. So as much as we're excited about this model and we think that it's setting a good example for our students and also being truer, better partners as an institution, there are a lot of things that make it really difficult. One is that it's highly resource intensive. So it requires money, but even more importantly, it requires time. One is in the partnership sense. It takes a long time and a lot of patience to cultivate really good lasting relationships with partners in the field. It's worth it. It's very worthwhile as an endeavor. However, it takes a lot of patience and it takes having a long view. Another way that it is resource intensive is that it takes a lot of staff time just to manage these relationships and these partnerships. So bringing over a couple of graduate students from Southeast Asia this year was something that I was piloting following another faculty member's model. I found that it has taken a ton of administrative work, and it took flying all the way to Vietnam to meet with the partner to get the whole thing going. It really takes a heavy commitment in every sense to making it work, and it requires that it be a core value. Otherwise, your time would just get pulled away on something else that's easier. A second challenge is that although mentorship is a core value and we also think it's highly worthwhile, it's hard to find support for it as an essential activity. So I mentioned that we rely heavily on grad students and postdocs. Those things require funding, and it's really hard to raise and identify funding for a postdoc who, in addition to conducting her or his own research, is also spending a lot of time mentoring students in the field and before the students go to the field, and after students go to the field. It takes a lot of mobilizing and it takes a lot of institutional buy-in to get that support. It also requires a very special type of junior researcher or faculty member who's willing to say, I'm going to pull away from the direct payoff of my own research to cultivate younger professionals, especially when they are early in their careers and there's a lot of pressure on them to produce in terms of publications and other areas. We're asking them to cultivate a very young generation of learners. And not everyone wants to sign up for this job, so finding the right people is key as well. And lastly, there has to be the right programmatic home for an interdisciplinary endeavor like this one. So it has to sit somewhere, and then wherever it sits has to have good inroads to a lot of different partners within an institution and then beyond an institution. So ultimately, we feel it's a really worthwhile model. We feel like we're investing in excellent leadership, developing professionals who will have a healthy dose of humility and greater intercultural respect for their partners. We think that we're training them well to think holistically about public health challenges and global health challenges. We're training them to anticipate the far-reaching impacts of their work, the ones that are positive and also the ones that are potentially negative. We really want them to look ahead and see what could be the unintended consequences of the way that they engage in the world. We're training them to respect all the players and stakeholders in a partnership, and we really want to train them away from a dominant model. Sometimes when you come from the U.S. with a lot of resources, you can inadvertently end up as a dominant player, even if that wasn't your intention, and we want to move them away from that, make them more aware of that risk. We want them to contemplate the consequences of their actions in the way that they work, and our goal is that in the end, we've really raised the odds of our students making a meaningful contribution to health over the long term. So I think I'm just about out of time, but these are some photos of students who've gone through our programs and how they've engaged afterward. I'll just highlight one case. In the bottom left corner, we've got Rafi, a student of ours who graduated just a couple of years ago, got his undergraduate degree in anthropology, studied global health, and he spent his summers working in Sierra Leone with at a clinic that had one doctor to serve a couple hundred thousand people. Our undergraduates have no medical training, so really they help in operations and in dealing with patients in all the non-medical ways. But suddenly he's found himself at the forefront of the response to Sierra Leone's Ebola crisis. And what he has really brought to the table is this understanding of the cultural and social and historical dimensions of health and of life that are interfacing with the way that Ebola has spread across many areas in the country. And he's really signaled how the public health response has to incorporate that sociocultural understanding. So that's the kind of professional that we want to breed. Thanks very much.